This is Phil Nee, and I hope all your trails are happy. We put the wraps on our morning session, bring on a little bit of community conversation. Next, following news update on WRCO-FM in Richland Center, Wisconsin. It's 53 degrees at 9 o'clock. The news this hour is sponsored by the Phoenix Center, family fun at its best. There's always something for everyone, including bowling, legendary pizza, and video games.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Former President Donald Trump back in court. Jury selection continuing in the Stormy Daniels hush money case. He is required to be there in person. A promise to put forth legislation that includes funding for Israel, Ukraine, Taiwan, and protections here at home. Instead of them all being included in one bill, however, it's being split into different pieces by House Speaker Mike Johnson. ABC Chief Congressional Correspondent Rachel Scott is on Capitol Hill.
Johnson knows he has a razor-thin majority. He's trying to satisfy all different wings of his party so that he can keep the speaker's gavel. Sources tell me that Speaker Johnson did speak to President Biden by phone before unveiling this package to Republicans behind closed doors just yesterday, but it's unclear if Democrats are going to go along with any of this. Either way, Johnson says those votes will be happening this week.
Israel's defense chief says there will be retaliation against Iran for the missile attacks, but won't say when. The flame that will burn at the Paris Olympics has now been ignited in Greece. This is ABC News. We're learning more about the disappearance of two Kansas women in Oklahoma last month. Several people are now under arrest. ABC's Jim Ryan has the details.
An affidavit connected to the arrest of four people suggests they had been plotting for months to kill the former daughter-in-law of one of them. And when Veronica Butler showed up to pick up her children from their grandmother, Tiffany Adams, the plan, according to that document, was activated, and Butler was murdered. Investigator Angela Spurlock.
This case did not end the way we had hoped.
Butler had a court-ordered supervisor with her as she drove to Adams' home. Jillian Kelly also was murdered. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
The CDC is now expanding its investigation into Botox patients being poisoned. 19 cases have now been reported in 9 different states. And fire roaring through one of the oldest buildings in Denmark, the 17th century Old Stock Exchange in Copenhagen. The iconic spire destroyed, but officials say many of the priceless paintings inside were rescued. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
You work hard. Making the right choice for lunch isn't hard. The Phoenix Center opens at 10 Monday through Sunday with all of your lunchtime favorites, burgers, salads, terrific appetizers, specialty sandwiches, wraps, and more. Easy in, easy out. The Phoenix Center is the perfect way to break up the day. Can't get away for lunch? Let the team at the Phoenix Center serve you a great meal tonight, including the world-famous Phoenix Center pizza. Or call ahead, 649-7469 for carryouts. From the Phoenix Center in Richland Center.
If you need bold banners to boost your business, but you're on a budget, think Staples. Posters, flyers, signs, and menus for less? Think Staples. Staples can print anything you need to move your business forward. Now at Staples, save $50 on your print purchase of $150 or more. Same day service available on hundreds of items if you order by noon. And all backed by Staples' Print Perfect guarantee. So it's done right or it's printed again free. Staples, your local print and marketing expert. N61, visit staples.com/print for details.
Today's forecast calls for a high of 64, widespread showers and thunderstorms by later today. Some could be heavy. A high of 64, east to southeast winds at 15 to 25 miles per hour with greater gusts. Heavy rain and storms early tonight, then spotty showers, breezy and mild, a low of 54. Cloudy occasional showers Wednesday and 62 degrees. Right now in Richland Center, after an early reading today of 62 and a low of 50, on the Wirtz floor and home temperature gauge, we're at 54 degrees.
Take the first step towards transforming your landscape into a more environmentally friendly space for you, the pollinators, and our community. Join Melinda Myers on April 27th from 1 to 2:30 p.m. at the Temple Theater in downtown Viroqua. Learn about manageable strategies to approach your landscaping from the ground up with the results that will fit your lifestyle and landscape goals. You'll get an overview of environmentally friendly lawn and garden maintenance, and learn simple steps that can make a big difference. Tickets are available at RidgesandRiversBookFestival.org.
Supported by Travel Wisconsin.
Step into a world of charm and discovery at the Avoca Mercantile. Embrace the joys of spring. Open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Explore the extensive array of unique and budget-friendly finds, from exquisite crafts to delightful home decor and gifts for all occasions. With new arrivals daily, there's always a fresh surprise in store at the Avoca Mercantile. Support local artisans and treat yourself to a delightful shopping experience. They can't wait to welcome you.
Bailey Paint and Decorating reminds you that the perfect color should be enjoyed for years to come. Extraordinarily durable Benjamin Moore paint and exterior stain ensure exactly that. Bailey Paint and Benjamin Moore know that getting the right product is the secret of success. Bailey Paint and Decorating ensures you have the right color and products and offers the best paint you can buy in Benjamin Moore paint products. Bailey Paint and Decorating, Court Street, Downtown Richland Center, your Benjamin Moore headquarters.
WRCO Studios, brought to you by the Richland Family Restaurant, your source for great tunes and delicious moments in Richland Center.
On our morning show from WRCO and WRCE, we have Al Cornell in the studio with us, writer and retired Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources wildlife technician, and talking about a new book, A Year at a Beaver Pond. And Al, it's so glad to have you in the morning show studio today.
Well, thanks. Glad to be here.
Was this a labor of love to put this together?
Well, let me read what a commenter. And this is a lady I'd never met other than she got my book, and she commented on it. And she said, this book is almost a love letter to the biodiversity that beavers support. So, I felt like that really summarized what I wanted to do and what I wanted to express in the book better than anything I could come up with. So,
sure.
I appreciated. And she's the Leeds, Wisconsin chapter of the Sierra Club as a wildlife team connection with that. So I appreciated her comment.
Good review right there. Yeah. Have you been thinking about a book for a long time, Al?
Well, I'd kind of gone through a few ideas about books, but nothing, you know, that I ever worked on very much. But then this one just fell in my lap. It just happened.
So a lover of the great outdoors. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Al.
Well, I do have a degree in natural resources from Stevens Point, and have soils emphasis, which I never really got very involved with the soils. But then for 20 years, I was a natural resource assistant or natural resource technician with the... See, I've been retired so long, I don't even know what it was. With the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, worked out of Spring Green and Sauk in Iowa County. So, in that capacity, and involved a little bit in that was I had a blaster's license, and once in a while people would call in and have problems with beaver, and so I did blow a few beaver dams, but kind of moved on beyond that now.
Well, give us a little description about beavers and, you know, a little bit of their history here in North America, if you would.
Yeah, of course, the first real big industry in North America was the fur trade, and those guys went across the continent before anybody else. And the beaver pelts used, and the felt that comes out of them is better than anything else, any other source. And so the hat thing really drove this wiping out the beaver in North America, and they were wiped down. I believe from 1800 to 1900, over 99% of them were wiped out in just a few remote areas is all that was left. And so one thing we see now, of course, is that we're transitioning back to where they're virtually everywhere, and so we're dealing with them. We didn't know what it was like before we wiped them out, and now we're seeing what it's like. And the first thing that comes up is the nuisances, you know, mm-hmm. the flooding roads, flooding fields, and things of that nature. And so we're learning more about coexisting with them, and there's a lot of movement now toward beavers are great, and they're keystone species, and they really have a value to the ecosystem that we have. The other thing that's happening right now is that I guess it's from this TV show Yellowstone, that there's these big hats and there's more demand for that felt. So the price of beaver were going up a little bit. So we kind of have to watch that and see what happens. That for a while there, just the castor glands were worth more than the pelt. And they were used in, well, especially in perfumes and stuff, but also in some foods. And really good smelling stuff that comes from near the other end of the beaver.
So they were practically extinct for a little while, weren't they?
Yeah, so much wildlife, of course, was driven down in numbers and so forth in that time frame. And a lot has been done to restore turkeys and deer and various other types of wildlife. And beaver mostly come back on their own. But in the West, there's been a lot of movement to restore beavers to areas where they've been wiped out. And one of the early experiments, which is always fun for people to think about, is that they parachuted. In Idaho, they parachuted beavers back into an area where they'd been extirpated to get them started. So they were in boxes that supposedly would open up when they hit the ground. And I guess it was, you know, tested a lot and pretty successful. And it was a successful restoration. But if you see in the West, you can see pictures from time to time. You might find a picture where the hills are charred from these fires. Just the mountainsides are just wiped out. And there's a green strip that runs up through the middle. And that's where beaver are. Without the beaver, the fire goes all the way. But the beaver dam up the water. They spread it out over a wetland area. And they create this situation. So they help fight fires. And they bring up the water table. And they keep streams flowing through the year that would otherwise be intermittent and would dry up. So they play an important role in that aspect. And just a lot of positives. So the book then emphasizes one aspect of the positive side of beavers, and that is the ecosystem. A year at a beaver pond, then the subtitle is Observations from One Little Dynamic Ecosystem. So it's just looking at that one aspect of beaver values that are there.
As the story goes, Al, then you were not aware of this pond at first, were you?
It's just a mile down the road from our place. We live close to the Vernon County line. Our property is on the Vernon County line. So it's just a mile down the road on County Highway D. And some of the people, neighbors there, said that they noticed that the willows were disappearing the summer before. But there's a lot of tall vegetation, so you could never see the pond or anything. So the beaver had moved in. And then the first year, they cut out the willows, used them for building the dam, used them for building their lodge and so forth. And then during the winter, the snowfall flattens the vegetation. And so as you drive down Highway D, you could see the beaver pond over there. So that's how I became aware of it. We started noticing that pond.
And then you were motivated. You're like, well, let's write a book about it.
Well, it took a little time. I contacted the landowner. It was on Paul and Shelley Swagger's property. And got permission to go in and set up to photograph, which to begin with, it was probably going to be a short-term thing. I like to photograph wildlife, done that for a long time. And I've photographed on some beaver ponds on the upper end of the Pine River, which is just a mile from our place the other direction, and has some nice stuff going on there, but nothing like this pond. This was just the ideal setup to go in and to photograph at. So I went in and set up a little pop-up blind with a chair in it. They're about 3 feet wide, so, you know, I spend I averaged over 4 hours at a time there, in total of over 400 hours sitting there in that little blind.
You just had to sit there, be still then.
Yeah, sat there and be still.
And let them do their work. Yeah.
So that was set up right at the edge of the blind, or the dam, right at the one corner of the dam. And it was right where I could walk into it from the road. The sun was coming up behind me, which was great, gave me the light that I wanted. And for some reason, the beavers left one little willow growing out in the pond. I think it was hard for them to get to that one due to the stumps and whatnot. They'd cut down all the rest of them. The stumps were there and had grown back willow whips. And so that one was sitting there 20 feet from the blind, and so many birds came in and used that tree that it was very interesting. I did photograph, I saw 61 different species of birds and photographed most of them during the time that I was there. 9 species of mammals showed up at the pond too, and trout and toads and insects. And
it's incredible. The photos in the book are just amazing. And so I wondered about that. What kind of a camera did you use?
I've got a Canon camera. It was the top end that Walmart sells, and but the lens is 100 to 400 millimeter, and pretty nice Canon lens that I could zoom in. Be nice to reach out a little further than 400, shooting across the pond sometimes, but it took care of most of the subjects I wanted to shoot.
So that was kind of an old school thing, because I was thinking maybe it was like some camera that was like, you know, set up on a timer or something, or a GoPro or something like that, but not the case.
Nothing like that. I know I have some friends that use camera traps, and they get some great wildlife pictures and stuff. And sometimes I thought maybe I should have something like that, but I just stuck with sit in the blind and wait and shoot whatever comes. And
you can see right in the beaver's eyes, can't you? Right there. Yeah, it's amazing. And did they notice you? Do they kind of notice you and they just kind of go about their work, or were they unaware?
The beaver themselves are mostly nocturnal, so I didn't see them too much. I emphasize the book is about the pond ecosystem. I've got 14 pictures in the book that have beaver in them. I've got 20 pictures that have wood ducks. There's 13 that have different species of warblers, or, several different species of warblers. So it's got a lot of variety. There's 135 pictures in the book and cover pretty much everything that was going on there that I had an opportunity to see.
It's like a major city with animals and mammals, isn't it?
Yeah, there were times when it was boring and slow and not much happening, but at other times it was really active. When I first went in to set up the blind, there were just an immense number of little fingerling brown trout, and they were feeding. They were jumping all over the place, and it was pretty interesting to see that. And the trout story unfolded pretty neatly for me. The most difficult picture to get was the trout jumping, because I would watch an insect. Midges, for instance, would be they live in the silt, the bottom stuff, and feed on organic vegetation that comes by. And there's oodles of them, just an amazing number of them and other insect larvae there. And they pop up to the surface in the pupa stage, and they break out of that almost immediately on reaching the surface. Then they'll spend about maybe 20 to 30 seconds altogether, every time they pop up, get out of that, and scoot across the water a couple of feet, and then they fly. And the quicker they get out of there, the better chance they have of surviving. So, and the trout are feeding pretty heavy during that time. So I would focus on one of those midges, and the trout would come. And as soon as I saw its nose come out, I would hit the button. Well, never quick enough. All I'd get was a little ring on the water. And I did notice a couple of trout jump for midges. And so I decided I'll aim at a midge, and if it flies off, I'll take the picture. And I did that about 4 times, and I got a picture of the trout completely out of the water. Now, I don't know how much of that was luck or a blessing or what it was, but I did get a picture of the trout out of the water, which was the most difficult picture to get.
Timing is everything.
Yeah.
Sure. That's awesome. Back to the beaver a little bit. I've always been curious about it, because I've seen, like, stumps that they have gnawed off there. But have you seen that in process and how that works and everything? I mean, how long does it take them to knock down a tree?
I really haven't ever observed them chewing down a tree that I did last spring after we had a snowfall in April. I did see the beaver out there, and there was a tree that they had fallen over, but it was by the stump by another tree, and they couldn't get it all the way down. It was lodged there, and so they were out there reaching up trying to feed. In springtime, they were hungry. They, mm-hmm. they go into the winter with a food cache that they can. In most places, they have to swim out under the ice and keep their food cache there. Now, here, all this water coming out of the ground at 47 degrees is coming, average probably a half a mile. So it never froze over. We had 19 below one morning, and part of it, it froze over, but never completely. So they're constantly working on the dam there and working at it. But, yeah, mostly nighttime. There was one stretch where the one beaver was coming out every evening, just as the shadow of the West Hill, as soon as the sun set behind the West Hill, the beaver would come out and work on the dam. And so,
time to go to work.
But one of the interesting things was that during the summer that year, they let the water drop by 20 inches anyway. So there wasn't any water going over the top. All the water was going through or underneath, which, by the way, is helpful for the trout because Matthew Mitro is the cold water biologist for DNR, and they're doing quite a bit of study, an 8-year study on the trout movement. And they mark some trout below a beaver dam that end up above the beaver dam. Now, to me, that seemed like, that's not going to happen. Those beaver dams are going to stop the flow of the trout. But if it's a situation where it's all a bushy dam and they can't jump up over it, they actually can swim through where the water is going either under the dam or through the dam. They can make their way back up. And so they it's not an impediment. The other thing that he says is that trout streams that have beaver dams, you get larger and more biomass of trout than you do on the other streams because the depth of the water keeps the kingfishers and herons and stuff from capturing as many trout as they would otherwise. So he said he has trout fishermen that go to trout streams that have beaver dams. Now, this completely upsets the concept that was in place for a long time in Wisconsin concerning. In the West, there was this sense beaver dams and salmon, which are, in fact, our brown trout is a member of Salmo genus. So they're closer related to salmon than they are to our brook trout. But anyway, these salmon and these beaver ponds and situations, this has gone on a long time together, and it functions that way. And so it's pretty interesting. There's some debate at the present time over should you have beaver ponds on the trout streams, and some people are still definitely wanting to remove them. But the new study kind of turns over the old 18-year study that was done to prove that beaver were ruining our trout streams. So
it does make sense, though. Less predators, obviously, and maybe more to feed on, too, for the trout then,
probably,
too.
Yeah, because you got a large area there. And like I said, it is full of larvae. There was shorebirds, the spotted sandpiper, the solitary sandpiper. My hero of the pond was this solitary sandpiper that had one leg missing. Apparently, a snapping turtle got a hold of it, and in the ensuing struggle, it had been torn off. It had completely healed over, and he's out there hopping around on one leg and probing for things. The Wilson snipe would roost at night right next to the blind, and I'd walk in the morning a lot of times 45 minutes before sunup, and he'd go flying off, and then he'd come back, and he'd be probing along the dam. He could spend half an hour going 2 feet and he's bouncing the whole time. It's kind of like a Happy Meal, the whole thing. He's just bouncing up and down, and he's probing, and he sticks his beak in the same hole, but I think changes direction a little bit. And he's got a prehensile tip on the bill so he can feel things. And I thought, well, how does he keep from just filling his crap with junk, rather mm-hmm. than getting what he wants? And then I kind of, in my mind, I made the comparison that if you had a bowl of crushed limestone rock, and you had some marbles in there, and you were feeling, you could pick out the marbles. And I think in the same way, the birds, you know, the snipe can pick that out. And certainly the raccoons, they would come in and stick their paws down in the water, and they're rubbing them together and rubbing them together, and then they're going to their mouth, and then they're rubbing them together. And I think they can pick out what they want, you know. They can figure out, hey, I got a good one here, you know, and they feed that way on it.
Yeah. The animal kingdom is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Lots of
interesting stuff that goes on there. So
all those animals and birds and everything, I mean, they got used to having you around then?
Well, there was, you could tell a lot of difference in the birds. Some were a little more nervous and stay a little further away from the lion. But wood ducks, we had broods of wood ducks coming. And they lay 12 eggs probably. And by the time they get across this wetland, you know, they jump out of the tree from 30 feet and they bounce like a rubber ball. And that's probably very seldom anybody gets injured doing that. But then they got to make that trip to the pond, which can be hundreds of yards that they may from where they nest in a cavity on the hill. Usually, or very frequently, an abandoned pileated woodpecker nest. The pileated woodpecker makes it, uses it for a year, and then it's the wood ducks. And so the ranges of those two species are pretty close to the same. Yeah. And so then they jump out, and then they got to go across, you know, they got to make that journey to the water. And so my first brood only showed up with four, but so entertaining. And those little ducks, my blind is right at the edge of the water, and the ducks were swimming around right right there. Hen would stay 8-10 feet away from me. She's a little bit not so accepting, but pretty accepting. The raccoons, if they would come, the deer, raccoons, and especially, if they would come in, they would get my scent if the wind was blowing in the wrong direction, and they'd be gone. But if the wind was in the right direction, fine. So some things were pretty nervous about the blinds. The eagle that kind of got us there to begin with was never came to the blind while, never came to the pond while I was in the blind. While I was in the blind, because we did drive down the road and see two eagles sitting there on the pond. Hey, why don't they come?
Yeah, we see more eagles than we used to, don't we?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so many things have transitioned as far as numbers are concerned. You know, we've run out of grouse practically.
Right.
We got eagles, we got turkeys, you know, and things just are always changing in that regard. Based on the habitat. Basically, you know, what we're doing with the habitat makes a big difference.
It does.
So one of my favorites of the pond was, I was always wanting to get the picture of the otter. And they had completely baffled me. I didn't think it was going to happen. The first one to come up over the dam, swam around in the pond. I took one picture, real grainy, because it was at least a half an hour before sun up. And, you know, oh, he's going to be back. Well, then, through the summer, two different times I saw him come up through the vegetation that's growing on top of the dam. There was a lot of jewelweed growing there, and into the water. And then I would never see him again. He's supposed to be down here showing off, you know. And so finally, last April, in fact, might have been a year ago today, somewhere about this time frame, I see this thing roll coming down around the corner. I thought, was that just a beaver roll? And then I thought, no, that's the otter. Well, he came and he just come 30 feet from the blind, and he came up out of the water and water dripping off in his whiskers and looked at me for a while. And then he swam around the pond for 45 minutes and just, you know, gave me the great situation. And then a few weeks later, I did have three otters show up, and I got some pictures of them, but the setting wasn't near as nice as it was for that one. So that was one of the challenges that I was afraid that I wasn't going to get the picture of the otter, but he did show up.
Was that the last picture of the book or for the book?
No, I started a couple sessions in April, and then I decided to do this month thing, and I didn't do much in the early part of May, so I overlapped. So the book begins with a chapter, the beginning, that talks about those couple of visits in the first April. And then it goes to May, June, July, August, September, October, November, and then December through February are lumped as one chapter. Not much happening. Really slow then, and then back to April. And I did go on into May a little bit then. And so the last thing I got was an old wood. I banded, Ben and Benning operations, where we banded over 4,500 wood ducks, and I've seen thousands of other wood ducks. And I'd never seen anything like that. I'm sitting there, and here this duck comes around, and it's got a typical female head, but the rest of the pattern is very much the male pattern for the duck. And I had no idea what it was. I did some checking around, and I found out that several birds in which the males are very colorful and the females are not, when the female gets old and is not producing much estrogen, she'll actually start taking on the color pattern of the male.
Oh, okay.
And so these wood ducks, and then there was a second one show up, which was blew my mind. The fact of seeing one was amazing, and then I have two of them show up. Had three wood ducks there. Two of them were these senescent old females that had male feather pattern on their bodies. So it was that was kind of a fun ending, I guess.
They were retirees, the ducks.
Yeah, they were retirees.
Good stuff. Al Cornell, our guest on the morning show, talking about a year at Beaver Pond. We'll have more coming up in just a moment.
Most of us agree that every Wisconsinite deserves affordable health care. California mega millionaire Eric Hovde does not. Hovde said he would repeal the Affordable Care Act, quote, in its entirety. What? The Affordable Care Act protects people from insurance companies refusing coverage for pre-existing conditions and stops them from dropping your coverage if you get sick. If Eric Hovde got his way, millions of Americans could get hit with increases in their healthcare premiums of 20% or more. Millions more could lose coverage altogether. Hovde even spoke out against parents helping their kids by keeping them on their health insurance plans until they turn 26. Now that might be okay for Eric Hovde. His businesses have raked in millions of dollars in handouts. But it doesn't cut it for hardworking Wisconsinites and our families. Call Eric Hovde at his California office, 714-730-4444. Tell him we support lower health care costs. Paid for by Better Wisconsin Together Incorporated.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
This is Lynette from the Prescription Center. We want to thank all of our longtime friends who have put their trust in us to manage their family's health. We want to thank our increasing number of new friends who have learned just how special we treat our friends. We do realize you can go anywhere or use mail order. We want you to choose us every day. We know copays are the same for any pharmacy in town. However, we feel we provide a superior value for your dollars. If you find our prices higher, we will match prices for all medications. We check to see if any of your prescriptions have dollar off coupons from the manufacturer. These coupons actually put money back in your pocket. If your current pharmacy does not do this, give us a call. We know your time is valuable. When you call ahead, your prescriptions are ready when you stop. I guarantee you will never wait in our drive-thru. Okay, we do not have a drive-thru. The Family Prescription Center, where you and your family always come first.
Are you ready to buy a house? Do you know somebody looking to buy a house? Do you not know where to start? Do you not know where to apply? Do you just have some general questions about buying a home? Hey, Jason Schultz here with USA Mortgage, the Schultz Mortgage Team, your local mortgage expert. When I say expert, I mean that because mortgage is all I do. I don't want your checking account. I don't want your car loan. I just want to help you buy a house. Whether you need an FHA loan, a VA loan for veterans, a USDA loan, or a conventional loan, contact the Schultz Mortgage Team 7 days a week, 604-5068. We do not work banker hours.
Every year, 4.5 million young adults between the ages of 18 and 24 visit the ER.
It's every parent's nightmare.
Umergency gives you all the tools you need to quickly and effectively manage your family's emergency. Umergency provides instant access to vital resources customized to your student's campus and local community, digital consent form, and built-in urgent alert button. Umergency gives you peace of mind when you need it most. Download your Umergency app now.
My baby brother, a father.
Come on, it's time for his nap. Whoa, he can't sleep on his stomach. Babies should always sleep on their backs in a safety-approved crib, and the sleep area should be clear of blankets, toys, and other loose or soft items. It reduces the risk of SIDS.
SIDS?
You know, sudden infant death syndrome.
Guess I need to start studying up on safe sleep for little man here. Being his favorite uncle comes with big responsibilities.
For more information, visit safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov, sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development.
Al Cornell, our guest on The Morning Show. We're talking about the great outdoors, and I think it's real timely, Al, because we're getting out and about, weather's better, and you can get out and you can see some of this wildlife firsthand, can't you?
Yeah, this was kind of the startup time for the book project, and it's just a great time to be out there. Pretty soon you're going to see the babies and all that kind of stuff is happening.
You've taken a lot of photos over the years. I noticed, I read that you had printed 700 wildlife photos approximately in magazines, books, and calendars through the years. But is there one that you're most proud of in the book that you can think of?
In the book, I have to go with the otter picture. It just came together perfectly. When the sun would come up in the morning, this time of year when it's not green out yet, you know, the leaves haven't come out, as the sun came up, it shone off the west hill, and that was the primary light on the pond, and it would give it a golden glow that reflected light from there. Now, when the sun shone directly on the pond, that would diminish because it would be the secondary light. You wouldn't hardly see that, but that gave me some opportunities to get some pictures that I really like that golden glow, and then just a picture without wildlife in it. I took a number of pictures of when the fall leaf out was on, and I got the reflection on the water with the reds and the yellows before the sunlight was hitting the pond, and so that really lit it up.
Let's talk a little bit about the many birds that you witnessed. You said, what, 61 different species?
61 species that I saw come there, and got photos of most of them.
Wow.
But not all. So yeah, had seven species in the warbler family. We probably have 25 go through, and they're wood warblers, so I didn't expect all of them to come out into the marsh and to the pond. Only the common yellowthroat nests away from shrubs and trees and out in the marsh. And if you drive down the road in the summertime, these common yellowthroats, if you're going by a wetland and you have your window rolled down, you can hear that witchita, 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 and you'll hear it get louder and fainter as you drive along, but it'll just keep on going and going. So we don't see a lot of them because, well, warblers are hiding. They come when we got leaf out, and they come when vegetation is high, and so we don't see a lot of them. But there's a lot of them that go through, and they visited the pond. The earliest warbler that we have is the yellow-rumped warbler, and they'll come when it's pretty cold yet. So they're coming to the pond because in the morning especially, there aren't any insects flying anyplace else. But that warmer water, it's still quite a bit warmer. There'd be some insects flying over the pond. So some days it would be a dozen yellow-rumped warblers show up there, and then the palm warblers and a bunch of others and warblers through the summer. Cedar waxwings were interesting. I always associated them with eating fruit and these little stinky little berries on the cedar, on the red cedars.
Okay.
they came and just kept increasing in numbers through the summer. And what was happening, there was a hatch of moth flies. We like to call them drain flies because we like to think of how things bother us. And if you got a wet area or maybe a concrete floor and a drain or something, you'll get all these drain flies. And so you go on Google and you can find out all these ways how to take care of that problem with the drain flies. Well, there are other common names, moth fly, and out there in the pond, I didn't want to call them drain flies, so I refer to them as moth flies. And there were hordes of them. They just kept popping up out of the bottom of the pond. and the wax wings got up to 20 at one time, and they would just sit on the willow and the whips where the stumps were cut down from the willows, and then they grew back that first summer. But then they were waterlogged too long, so they died. So you got all this little whips standing up there, and the birds would sit on those, and then when they would see a fly out over the pond, they'd come charging after it and feed on it. And so they were constantly there. And swallows, there were four different species of swallows, and they were flying the long axis of the pond, and they would swoop down and just touch the surface of the pond, and I know they were picking off these larvae. And then later in the year, when you had the young ones, they'd swoop down to pick it off, and they'd make a big splash. They hadn't quite got that down to the art yet of being able to pick that little larvae off there with hardly even disturbing the water at all.
So. And not get wet. Yeah,
yeah.
Right. There's an art to it. Lots of wood ducks, too, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. We had that first brood of wood ducks, and then I was surprised on the 12th of July when a second brood of wood ducks showed up, and she had seven to start with. But that would represent a renesting, that her first nest was probably destroyed before they hatched. And so then she renested, and so that later brood would come into play. And so they were there. The first day that they were on the pond, which they may have been 2 days old or something from the time they hatched, this one little wood duck come up right really close to the blind, far enough away I could focus on him, but right there on the dam, real close to it. And he found an earthworm, and he grabs it, and it reminded me of when Mom got her roosters every year and get those baby chicks from Chet's. And then us boys would like to take earthworm and throw it in there, because even though they're a day old, they know what that is, that thing wiggling there. That's good food. And they would all get excited about it. Well, this little guy, he finds this and it gives me a chance to take a nice picture of him pulling that earthworm out when he's just a little bitty guy. So, yeah, there was a lot of different activity in that regard.
Uh-huh. Toads? You saw a few of those?
Yeah, there's a period for about a little over a week in which the toads are mating, and it starts about the middle of May. And all of a sudden, there was lots of toads there. The rest of the summer, the din of the red-winged blackbirds was just constant. You know, they're potpourri or whatever they're saying. They're hollering all over the place. And the toad song drowned them out. They got so into it that they just drowned out the noise of the red-winged blackbirds. And so they were really active there for a short period of time every year. It was fun to see them.
All the animals came together because of the beavers. A Year at Beaver Pond is the name of the book. And the beavers, you know, let's talk a little bit more about them as we close here. How do you tell the difference between a male and female beaver?
Well, this is really important in the where there's beaver restoration going on, and this happens a lot in the West. California, for a long time, thought they didn't have any beavers and never had beavers, which was crazy because they were everywhere else. But do I have a few minutes?
Yeah, well, go ahead. Okay. Yeah, this will be our lesson here today.
actually, in the 1600s, people from China, Eastern Asia, came around, probably stayed fairly close to land and came around, and they were after what are those? Anyway, this sea otters, great pelts. They were working on the sea otters and taking the pelts back, of course. Well, when the otters were kind of running out, they went inland and took the beaver, because this was a great pelt too. And as I mentioned, the felt that comes from them is highly demand. And so they were wiping them out. And they virtually wiped out California beavers. And for a long time, the Fish and Wildlife, though, we never had beavers here in California. And now there's a great effort to restore beavers to a lot of California. And again, the upside of beavers is something that we just need to. And the book is about one aspect of that upside. And it's important to understand the values of the beavers that they have there. And so a lot of the ranchers in dry areas of the West have come around to, maybe we don't want to wipe the beavers out because it holds up the water table and they get the grass and so forth. But around here, we do get the amazing ecosystem effect from the beavers. And beaver ponds hold water, and where you got a waterhead in the creek system, it's going to be pushing water into the water table. So they're helping hold the water into the water table and helping with the supply of water in that way. And that also, there was a concept that where there's beaver pond, the stream is going to warm up and it's not going to be good for trout. But in Mitro's study, he found that downstream some places, the water was actually cooler than it was in the pond. And the reason for that is this water is being pressed into the groundwater, and there's new springs feeding water into it all the time. And so you get this cooling effect that's taking place. And especially in this area where beaver ponds are small, if you get into some places like northeastern Wisconsin where it's a lot leveler, then you might, instead of having a tenth of an acre pond, you might have a 10-acre pond or larger, and then you can have more of the effect of warming it. But here it has a lot of value in that context. So yeah, it was fun watching the beavers. When I did get that one that was working every evening, bringing mud and sticks and a few stones. They'll put a few stones, plug up their holes, and the mud is always washing out from between those sticks and stuff, so they're always filling it back in. So they're working at it constantly.
Well, I always wondered what was going on in that beaver dam. They actually lived down in there somewhere?
They lived up around the corner. Most beaver build that big lodge.
Ah.
You see a large lodge, sometimes 6-8 feet sticking up above the water, out in the water. But where they have the opportunity, if there's enough terrain, they'll find a bank, and they've build the dam so that it floods the area, and they can go underwater and dig a bank den back in out of sight, or mm-hmm. you don't even know where the entrance is to it.
They don't even, I guess people would think they live in the sticks where the dam itself is, but they don't.
They either build a lodge or live in a bank den.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Where they're at.
We did start talking about male and female, though, and that's...
And I forgot.
That's all right.
Where I was going on now.
Yeah, I was waiting for the end of the history lesson there, but there are people that can tell the difference, right?
Yeah, the beaver gentilia is all on the inside, and so you get a beaver and you don't know what it is, and you don't want to stock a place with four males or four females and none of the other. And so they figured out the easiest way to tell is these castor glands that the beaver have, which they're always using to make scent marks for themselves and marking their territory and so forth. But the scent between the male and the female is distinct enough that if you smell the butt of the beaver, you can tell whether it's a male or female. They could do that. I think they should use dogs to do that. The dogs would be happy to do that type of thing. But
sure.
But that's the process that the biologists use now in connection with restoring beavers to different locations, which we don't need to do in Wisconsin. We got beavers everywhere. Every watershed in the state has beavers now, so we're having a lot of ecosystem building by the beavers.
Learning how to coexist, because you mentioned they can be a nuisance, but that's kind of the key word, isn't it?
Yeah, and we should have the intelligence to be able to coexist with them.
Right.
And the idea was always nuisance beavers, got to trap them, got to get rid of them, got to do this. But now there's a couple of different systems that are used to help control. If beavers are flooding a road, you can go to the dam and you can put in a dam leveler. It's kind of an expensive process, but you got to have a tube that runs through the dam and is protected on its upper end so that the beaver can't get to it to block it off. So it's got to be fenced off there and so forth. And you can do the same thing with culverts then, with beaver deceivers, they call them, that they use in the culverts. They run this tube through and control the water there. Of course, if you're a beaver and you come to a place where there's a road and a culvert through it, and all you have to do is plug the culvert to get a big pond,
that's
why not?
Easy
that's
work.
What, that's what you're going to do. So, you know, we have to, and we should be intelligent enough to be able to coexist with the beavers and take advantage of the many benefits that they offer, and at the same time keep them from doing things that our nuisance beavers do from our standpoint.
It's been a pleasure having you on here, Al. How can people get a hold of your book if they are interested?
Well, it's on Amazon. I don't get much royalties if they buy it on Amazon, so they can buy it from me. Book Baby, mm-hmm. put out the book, and you can go on Book Baby Bookshop. And I get a better royalty from people that buy from there.
And Daniel has it at Okooch, too. I saw it at Okooch Books and Libations as well.
Yes, so. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So you can get it locally. But, yeah, it's been great to have you on here and nice to learn about it. And I had to think when you're sitting out there looking at nature, that's kind of like an outdoor church, isn't it, in some ways?
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, just there's a connect there to I think God told us to take care of the things that we have. And in fact, I end the book with a little quote here. The dynamics of an ecosystem and the flow of life through eons invite us to endorse the adequate wisdom and source. The Pentateuch warns, land is mine and you reside in my land as foreigners and strangers. The beaver pond is a call to that stewardship of this spaceship we journey upon. And so I think God calls us to be stewards, and that's part of it.
Yeah. Great way to end. Al, thanks a lot, and keep up the good work. Come back if you write another book, right?
Sally says I can't do that.
She's saying.
I'm not very good electronically.
Oh.
And my source is Sally.
She said one's enough, huh? All right. Al Cornell, A Year at a Beaver Pond. The book, check that out again in some of the sources that we talked about. The morning show continues in a moment. Some award winners nationally. We'll talk to Cheryl Baxter, and that's coming up in just a moment.
What's the room again?
1240, down at the end.
Ooh, what's that?
Sammy, don't touch that. That's someone's old food.
Here we are. Do you have the key?
You have both of ours.
Oh, right. Not working.
Rub it.
Come on.
Try flipping it over.
Seriously.
Why can't we go inside?
I'm tired.
Give me yours.
You have mine.
All right. What?
Please, if you
Dad,
could just...
Dad, why aren't you opening the door?
Can everyone just shut the...
Don't go there. Go on a real vacation. Go RVing. Learn more at GoRVing.com.
Muscadet Morel Mushroom Headquarters is the place to be on Saturday, May 18th. Our tasting area will host Meister Cheese, Studnicka Cattle Company, Gillingham Meads LLC, Driftless Gold Organic Maple Syrup, Wild Hills Winery, and Surgeon's Winery from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Donnie Razick will play from noon to 3 p.m. Thank you, Meister Cheese and Muscadet Protein, Meyer Construction, and Biba Palooza, for being proud sponsors of the festival.
Joining us on WRCO Radio, we have Cheryl Baxter, Beth Bowles, and they are recently award winners. How about that, ladies?
Yay!
Woo!
Party on.
Has the party stopped since you were honored in Las Vegas?
No.
Still going.
We're in shock.
We are still in shock. We are in shock.
Well, tell us, who is the stiffest competition? Where did that come from?
Well, it's the Cheer Choice Awards, and they're an award show that spread positivity on social media. And we actually were nominated by a friend we did a podcast for named Brittany Cross, and we didn't know anything about this award show. And so she nominated us. And then our lovely Facebook friends, Instagram friends, and TikTok friends vote for you. And some of our Facebook friends around the area of Richland Center and Dodgeville and Avoca voted for us every day.
Wow.
For how many, like a month or something?
Yeah, it went on forever. The voting went on forever.
So we have to thank them immensely for
sticking in there with us.
Every
yes.
day we'd be like, can you vote again? And they'd be like, yes.
They're like, it's not over yet. And we're like, no, we made it to another round.
Wow. Yeah, they had all these rounds, you know, 50 to 25 to 10 to 5. Mm-hmm. And when we got in the top five, we were thrilled, never thinking we would win, right, Beth?
Phil, we were up against Costin Mayer, who are they're huge
they
here
millions,
in Los Angeles.
Millions.
And a weatherman named Nick, who's on TV.
In New York City. He's the New York City weatherman. We thought he was going to win because he was going up and down the street getting everybody to vote for him, you know, in Times Square, for gosh sake.
Wow.
We prepared nothing. We went just going to have fun, to meet people. And we are sitting there with our agents.
Our agents from Clear Talent Group.
Our little social media agents that are 25 and 27. Cheryl and I are 66 and 65.
Right. And they came with us and we were shocked. I mean, when they read our name off and they said, the winner is the Baby Boomers. And we went for something that was group rhythmic. Because
I guess Cheryl and I are
a group. But we don't care. It's like so fun. We had a ball. It was at the Palms in Las Vegas and at the Big Pearl Auditorium. So it was really pretty.
Phil, we met the nicest people. That community on TikTok and Instagram, they're so loving and giving. And this was a give back. They're raising money to give back to families in need. So not only was it fun, but it was, you know, a worthy cause. So they're called Cheer Choice, and it's called Spread the Cheer. And they are incredible givers.
Mm-hmm. So it was great. Are you still there?
I sure am. Were you starstruck?
We can just talk and talk. Well, so you can butt in whenever
I appreciate that. Were you starstruck about it? I mean, were there some big names there?
There's a woman named Mama Tot, and she's got, I don't know how many millions of dollars.
These are TikTok celebrities. Mm-hmm. And then there is a woman there called Big Sexy, and she has a huge following, and I just think she's great.
And Rosie O'Donnell that we've met on some of our lives, she comes onto our lives. She sent a video, so she couldn't come, or she wasn't nominated. And she goes, I'm not nominated, but I'm sending a video anyway.
She wanted to be nominated, but...
We'll have to nominate her next
year. I know we will.
So it was so much fun. We had a ball.
Tell us about what you do, your podcast, for people that haven't tuned in.
Well, we are the Baby Boomers, and Beth and I have been best friends for 45 years, and we've been in the entertainment business in L.A., and, you know, we're singer, dancer, actors, and we've done a lot of shows together, Broadway shows, television and film, and we did the Grammys in 2021. We backed up DaBaby, the rapper DaBaby, so he picked about six people in our age group, right, Beth? We were all 63 at the time?
Yep, right.
And so we backed him up on the Grammys doing rock stuff.
63 and older, yeah.
63 and older. And it was a big smash on the Grammys. I mean, it was all over, right, Beth?
Yeah, the Rolling Stones wrote about us. It was like we were one of the top 10 most interesting things that happened during the Grammys that year.
Because it was still COVID, and so we were all kind of masked up until the very last minute of the telecast. And we were 10 feet or 6 feet apart because in COVID days, you know, you couldn't. We were a choir, but because they put us in robes, we looked like Judge Judy. And people were like, what is happening with DaBaby? Is this Judge Judy? Is he telling us he's going back to jail?
They thought, yeah, he was in trouble or something. Is he making some kind of statement?
Right.
And so, his statement was, anyone of any age, any color can like rap and learn it and sing it, because we had to sing it and perform it.
Yeah, it was a brand new Lamborghini. It was that whole rock star. So 2 days later, we jumped on TikTok. We did the rock star challenge, and we got over 1 million views on our very first TikTok, which if anybody knows TikTok, they know it's hard to get like 5 views when you put your first, you know, TikTok up. So since then, we have been doing a lot of TikToks. How many? Like 350 are probably on our page. So we dance.
That now.
We dance. We sing. We entertain.
Yeah,
we
joke around.
You know, so we have about 640,000 followers right now on TikTok. We have a TikTok agent, which we talked about. And we're doing ads and all kinds of stuff on TikTok. It's so much fun.
And Phil, our mission really is, you know, never to stop dreaming. You know, we really are fighting against any kind of ageism. Mm-hmm. You know, age is just a number. Cheryl and I are so energetic, so positive. We love our lives at this age, and we want people to know you can do anything that you still want to do. I mean, you really can if you put your mind to it, and to get out there and have fun and do whatever you want.
I think that's what draws people to our Instagram and our TikTok. We have, of course, still Facebook, and for those people that are afraid to go on TikTok, but that's our challenge with them. We're trying to get people to come over to the other side of Instagram and TikTok too. You know?
Well, it's staying current, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing that keeps our minds going. So when we had to learn to edit, we had to learn to film, we had to, you know, learn the whole TikTok platform. But it's really helped us to stay sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And TikTok is where all the youth is, right?
Mm-hmm.